The Kwisatz Haderach breeding program was designed to benefit humanity. But at what cost? At what human cost? Lady Jessica, Private Journals. In her mind and heart, Jessica found herself at the bottom of an abyss. Each moment took her farther from Caladan, Duke Leto, and Paul. After receiving the Bene Gesserit ultimatum and the threat against her family, Jessica had crossed star systems in a Space and Guild Highliner, ordered back to Wallach 9 like a recalcitrant child. She felt no warm homecoming as she rode a shuttle down from the huge orbiting ship to the Sisterhood's dreary, cold homeworld.
That was an audio clip from Lady of Caladan, a novel by Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson, performed by Scott Brick, whom I call the voice of Dune. It highlights the breeding program that Lady Jessica violated. She gave birth to a son, and not daughters, as the plan instructs. Sisterhood of Dune concentrated on the Bene Gesserit, going back in time. Kevin J. Anderson and Brian Herbert wrote this prequel from Frank Herbert's extensive notes. And this is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics help us explore humanity. Sisterhood of Dune, the series, is now filming. Let's go back to the novel and get a sense of one of Dune's most mysterious orders with Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson.
It's hard to believe. I still have stuff online that we did back in 2006. So we've been doing this a while. It's really amazing. But it's always a pleasure. Sisterhood of Dune, I think what's exciting for me as a Dune fan is that you go back to the very beginning, and I know we've talked about it a little bit in the past, but now we can talk about it more, the beginning of the Bene Gesserits, and that's pretty cool. That must have been fun to use the notes and incorporate that into this one.
Well, it seems fitting for us to begin with a new trilogy with Sisterhood of Dune. Women are so powerful in the Dune universe, and by Frank Herbert's books 5 and 6, they're running everything, and they're just interesting characters. There's very strong female characterizations all through the Dune series.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Sisterhood is sort of a follow-up to our a previous trilogy we had done about the Butlerian Jihad, which is the war against the thinking machines. And in that trilogy, it's almost the discovery of all the things that you're familiar with in Dune. The first sandworm ride, and how the Fremen came to the planet Arrakis, and how the feud between the Atreides and Harkonnen started. But in this trilogy, it's about 80 years later, and it's really the formation of the Dune universe. It's showing how the great schools were formed, and the other books in the trilogy will be about the navigators and the mentats and the swordmasters and the Sook doctors and sort of the formation of the Imperium. But in this one, we thought that the Bene Gesserit they've always been just a key to the Dune universe. They're sometimes the shadowy power behind the throne, or sometimes, like Ryan said in the later books, that they're right there with the reins of power. But they've always been there. I can't imagine the Dune universe without all these powerful women.
So oh, yeah.
To hang out with him and write a big book.
And how much of Frank Herbert's notes were used on this one? I mean, was there a lot of information on the beginnings of the Bene Gesserit in his notes?
Well, we've always avoided questions like that because it would be a wedge to get more information out of us about the rest of the notes.
Yeah, true.
Well, see, the thing is, we've had a couple thousand pages of notes that were some of the back history, and this is our 12th Dune book that we've done now, and using what Frank Herbert left in his notes, and using obviously the primary stuff is what he left in his 6. Really magnificent novels that he wrote. And plus, by this point, Brian and I have really laid quite a big mosaic of the history of the Dune universe. So we just try to put all of it together to tell a really good story. And we think that in this trilogy, we're starting to explore some things that we hadn't been able to before. And we had the freedom to do it, but it also is something that I think Dune fans are really interested in.
We're also bringing back some of the very popular and familiar characters from the Butlerian Jihad trilogy, such as Erasmus and Orion Atreides and some other rascals that are involved in our story, too.
More on Sisterhood of Dune with Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson in a moment.
You also bring in the Navigators a little bit, and you see their development a little bit too, and I thought that was cool.
Well, and you'll see a lot more of those in some of the later books too.
Cool.
I think one of the really interesting parts, to me at least, in this book and in this trilogy is it in Frank Herbert's Dune, in the later books, it's a big fundamental thing that there are no computers, there are no thinking machines, that people have become human computers themselves, and the Navigators have mutated into these almost super beings so they can guide spaceships and things. In this book, we show sort of the beginning of the fanatical turnover, the getting rid of all technology, sort of the smashing windows, crushing computers, and how the fanatic movement against technology sweeps across the Imperium. And, you know, I don't know about you, but if somebody told me that I was going to have to spend the rest of my life with no running water and no flush toilets and no electricity and no television and no medical science, that really wouldn't sound very appealing to me. So we had to make that sort of case as to why such a great movement would be so terrified of how dangerous thinking machines are that they would be willing to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
And as a corollary to what Kevin just said, we talk about how seductive machines can be.
Yeah.
And look at how that is now. It entices us into the realms of the machines, and maybe we shouldn't be in there that deeply all the time. Kevin also mentioned that there are no computers at the time of Dune. Well, and if you look at all the characterizations in the Dune universe and all the different classes of characters, there really are no typical aliens. So there's no computers, no aliens. It's not your typical science fiction, but it's outlasted many series that were contemporary with Frank Herbert. And it's largely because Frank Herbert was writing about what it means to be a human being. If you look at the Sisterhood, well, they've got this breeding program to breed a superhuman, and then the Mentats are supercomputers, and the Navigators are, you know, stretching their minds to encompass the entire universe. And really, it's interesting to us, and it's a classic theme to consider what are the possibilities of being human. It's much more interesting than the possibilities of machines, which are frightening.
Yeah, I think it's a never-ending question. You know, we're still trying to figure it out. We haven't figured it out yet. So it's really, that's part of the discovery. And series like this is just shedding a light on a problem and making it more interesting than just mm-hmm. discussing it flat out, which is, you know.
And some very large-scale warnings, which science fiction writers like to do.
Absolutely. It's been a staple of it.
I also really like the very idea of, we rely an awful lot on computers and technology to make our lives simpler, but if you really had to take those away, could human beings develop themselves and become strong enough and versatile enough to fill those roles? And obviously Frank Herbert believed, and I believe the same thing too, that we have such great potential within us that we can do anything a machine can do, provided we have the incentive and we work hard enough at it.
And with too much dependence upon machines, we are atrophying, if that's a word. I know atrophy is, but that there's a process where we're losing the mental muscle.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's one of the beauties of Dune is it brings up such great questions about humanity, and we can just talk about that all night. That's the beauty of it. One of the things I've seen, and that's kind of like the supplemental materials, and it's something that's I've seen a lot, and it's awesome that you guys did it. I really have to commend you both on the nice, book trailer that I saw for Sisterhood. I really, really enjoyed it.
We followed it, and we got Scott Brick is the narrator who did the audio version of all of our Dune books. And they put together, they meaning Tor Books and I forget the name of the company that they went with to produce this. But we really wanted Scott to do the narration because he is the voice of Dune. He knows how to pronounce everything and he knows how the right emphasis, and he had already read the novel. So we were very pleased with how the book trailer came out, because in these days, publishers don't usually run commercials on television, and the way to go now is on the internet and social media, and
yep.
This is just a great way to spread everything around.
A great cover, although I did detect just a slight bit of David Lynch style in it, just a little bit, but it's a very nice cover. Really, really enjoyed, really looked seeing it.
Well, this is the same artist who did the cover for Winds of Dune.
Oh, yeah.
Who also seems to like the very skin-tight still suit, I guess. But that was a scene that the publisher and the marketing people picked. It's a Fremen woman who's on a spice raid.
Mm.
It's a spectacular painting, lots of, you know, explosions and beautiful and deadly-looking Fremen women on it. We had kind of hoped there might be Bene Gesserit on the cover of this. But I guess scholarly women who pull strings behind the scenes aren't the most action-oriented cover images.
So this is the first of a trilogy. I'm sure by now you're working on the second one by now.
We've outlined it, but we have not set about doing the chapters and more details.
Oh, okay.
Because we're finishing up right now the second book in our Hellhole series, so we are alternating books now. Hellhole 1 year, and then a Dune book the next year. So Sisterhood is just out now, and we're wrapping up Hellhole Awakening, which will be the next book to be published. But it'll be probably a month or so before Brian and I will get together again and face-to-face brainstorm and work out all the big details of Mentats of Dune, the second book.
Oh, nice.
But we've already got most of it outlined already. And we know.
And then the third one is Navigators of Dune, which is about space and guild even more. And, of course, the other schools that you may notice that are missing, the Zook Doctors and the Swordmasters, and some others that we postulate were in there, those are folded into the three novels.
Very nice. I'm looking forward to those. That's awesome. It's just great. It's such a great universe to play around in. I mean, we've been talking about that for years, and it's a
sandbox.
Yeah, it is a nice sandbox. It really, really is.
Well, and Frank Herbert himself did us this wonderful favor by, from the very beginning, he mapped out that there's 10,000, 15,000 years worth of history, depending on which of his books you go to. He's mapped out so much, and he's left so much there for us to explore. I mean, we could keep writing Dune books forever if that's what we wanted to do, because there's so much other stories to tell. But because it says Dune on the cover, we really want to do something that's a significant story, and we felt that the formation of the Bene Gesserit was probably the most significant one that we had.
Hellhole 2, is that like a direct sequel to the first one?
Well, it better be, or we're going to lose a lot of readers.
It's a trilogy, and it picks up, I think it starts like a week after the other one ends. It's really a tight trilogy with the same characters, and we do have that, all three of those books mapped out as to the beginning, middle, and end, and what happens, and all the secrets we'll reveal. And the reason that we did this alternating year, so we do Dune 1 year, and then Hellhole the next year, and then Dune the year after that, is to keep ourselves fresh so that we don't feel like we're just always doing the same story, but this way we get to take a breath and recharge our Dune batteries while we work on Hellhole, and then vice versa. And, it seems to be working out pretty well, provided our memories still stay with us and we remember all the details of the characters from one book to the next.
Sisterhood of Dune on Sci-Fi Talk continues in a moment.
You know, gentlemen, since we started talking, the world has changed a lot as far as novels and how they're assimilated, for lack of a better term. But what are your feelings now about, like, the way books are gotten to electronically, like, you know, with the Kindle and the tablets and things like that? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we'll let Kevin talk about the joys of that business.
You know, I get into, a lot of people are very passionate about it, and they will argue that they love ebooks or they hate ebooks and they only want to read physical paperbacks or hardcovers. I don't really sympathize with either side of those things because I read them both. When I'm at home, I love to have a physical hardcover when I'm sitting there in a chair and reading it. But Brian and I go on book tours all the time, or we're traveling to conventions, or we're doing things, and Brian's on the train, or I'm on the airplane, and we're going all over the place, and hauling around a giant Tom Clancy hardcover is just a little rough on the wrists and the back when you're doing that all the time. And I love to read off of my Kindle while I'm traveling, but I like the hard copy books too. I think what we've done is a perfect example of the advantages of the ebooks, though, is a great many of Frank Herbert's books have been out of print for a very long time. And a whole lot of Brian Herbert's books have been out of print for a long time. A whole lot of Kevin Anderson's books have been out of print for a long time. But our fans still want to read them, so they go and haunt used bookstores trying to find some battered old paperback. But because of ebooks, we now have the capability of taking those old books and making them available again, that it's not such a huge investment like a publisher has to print up all these books and ship them to bookstores and monitor the sales. Mm-hmm. We can take these books that have been out of print, and they're available now. It's wordfirepress.com is where we've got them up. I don't know the exact, it's a total of like 58 titles that we've got up there, but we have just about every one of Brian's books and almost all of my out of print books and all of Frank Herbert's books that were not available. In fact, we're getting the last couple of them up now in the next couple of weeks.
And we broadened it a little bit too because, I had an offer from another publisher, a small publisher, for a book called The Stolen Gospels. Well, instead of going that route, I decided to go straight to ebook, and Kevin has published The Stolen Gospels and The Lost Apostles, which is a huge 200,000-word religious thriller with the science fiction and fantasy element. So we're doing a lot of different things.
Oh, that's cool.
Right. Yeah, those are our original books by Brian that they're not out of print and they're reprinted. These are books that this is the only place that you can get it is by either getting the ebook version, and we've actually worked out that you can order a printed version of Brian's books too. And I guess the exciting news is that I'm doing the proofreading now. It should be a week or two before we get it all finished up. But we have some of Frank Herbert's never before published books and short stories.
Oh,
and
nice.
We'll be getting the first one of those available very soon now. His first novel published was The Dragon in the Sea, and then he wrote several books that he could not get published, and finally he wrote this other book that nobody in their right mind would publish. It was this giant science fiction book called Dune that got rejected. Do you remember the total, Brian, like 23 times or something?
Yeah, it's somewhere in that range, over 20.
And Frank wrote a lot of stuff that just did not fit the market at the time, but Dune was just so good it eventually found somebody who published it, and the rest is history. But we have the manuscripts from several novels that Frank Herbert wrote before he got Dune published that have never seen the light of day, and we're going to work through getting those available.
And he wrote whatever he felt like writing. He didn't particularly think about a market. He wrote articles that were too long for magazines and not the subjects that people wanted. But his first novel, Dragon in the Sea, he invented containerized shipping.
Yeah.
And it was from that idea that Frank Herbert had that the Japanese went on to make it even bigger. So there's lots of great ideas between Dragon in the Sea and Dune, and so we're going to start publishing some of those.
That's awesome.
And honestly, I haven't even read most of the manuscripts yet. I've got this stack right here. I'm looking at it right now on my table of the Frank Herbert stories, and a lot of these are mystery stories, and there's some sea adventure stories, and I think there's a novel in here about a revolution in Central America that we're going to work our way through these and just make them available because, of course, they're all in old carbon copies. Nobody's got electronic versions of them, so they need to be keyed in and cleaned up. But we can do this because of electronic books and by putting them up for Kindle and Nook and Kobo and the other formats for iPad that I don't know that any regular publisher would tackle these things because they just don't know what the market is. But we believe that there's a market among the Frank Herbert fandom that they'll make it viable and they'll be able to pick up the book. So,
and the first novel is High Op. Isn't it High Op?
High Op. It's like High Opportunity. It's
cool.
I'm just starting to read it and go through it now, but it's basically it's sort of a dystopian. There are different stratas in society, and some people are born into high opportunity strata. Some people are underground, and there's a revolution that happens. I'll know better after I finish combing through it.
Sounds like now.
Yeah, it does, isn't it?
Yeah. Frank Herbert was always a visionary. Maybe he's got some other great stuff in these manuscripts that we don't know. There's another one about an old woman in like a Polynesian island, and her boat gets sent away in a storm, and she's trying to get back to the island, and sharks are coming after her. And there's some really interesting stuff here. I'm looking forward to savoring through them one step at a time.
We have a really massive manuscript that is going to need a lot of work. And it was Frank Herbert's story about the Indian wars on the West Coast of the United States, and he did a lot of research about the injustices done to Native Americans. And his greatest book that's been published so far that's not science fiction is Soul Catcher, and it's about Native Americans. And so it was always something that was very dear to his heart. So we hope one day to bring that massive book that Frank Herbert left for us unpublished, also bring that to press.
That's interesting. Yeah, which Soul Catcher is one of the last books of Frank Herbert that's out of print and is not available, but we now have it keyed in and it's in electronic format, and we're cleaning it up, and that should be one of our very next ones that goes up for sale at wordfirepress.com. So,
and when Kevin's not doing that, he's got a zombie detective series.
Oh, do you really?
We're always busier. I have a, yeah, it's a humorous horror. The guy's name is Dan Shamble, and he's a zombie private detective in a world where there's vampires and werewolves and zombies and everything. And he just solves cases among the downtrodden unnaturals. And I've got three books in that series, and another sequel trilogy to my Saga of Seven Sons, my big science fiction series that I've got. And as Brian mentioned, we just published his Stolen Gospels and the Lost Apostles.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian, you just sold the book to Tor Books.
Yes.
Yes, it's the Little Green Book of Chairman Rama. I remember being at Berkeley quite a few years ago, and there were all these tables and outside with little copies of the little red book of Chairman Mao and all the demonstrators. And it just occurred to me, well, what if that group became, you know, the new government in total, and we had a green government, which is what so many people would like to see. So, in science fiction, we like to extrapolate and think about what if. So that's what I've done with the Little Green Book.
Cool. Well, that's awesome.
In other words, that's another excuse for Tony to have Brian on the show.
That's right.
When the book comes out.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I can talk about left and right wing politics.
Yeah, well, that's not too far off base these days, especially in the election year.
People talking about it.
Yeah, they're talking, you know, with the election and everything. That's all they're really talking about, even within one party. But I'm not going to get into that. It's great. It sounds like you guys are busy as always.
Absolutely.
Well, the thing is that we, you know, there are other authors that maybe publish one book every couple of years, and I can't for the life of me figure out what they do for the rest of the time. And Brian and I have done a new book every year for 13 years now.
Wow,
together.
That's awesome.
Plus, he's written his own stuff, and I've written my own stuff, and we tour all the time. We just finished going on an around-the-country book tour for Sisterhood of Dune.
Yeah.
In fact, some of your listeners might have seen us at some of the stops.
Mm-hmm.
We hit a lot of cities, and this time we did something even more extravagant, I think, is that we split up and we did a two-prong tour, so we hit twice as many cities in the same number of days.
Oh, that's cool.
And we went all over the country and met a lot of fans and signed the books and did as best we could to do our writing and editing in the hotel room in the evening after the signing.
And it was an international tour because I went up to Canada.
Here's a complete clip from Lady of Caladan performed by Scott Brick.
The Kwisatz Haderach breeding program was designed to benefit humanity. But at what cost? At what human cost? Lady Jessica, Private Journals. In her mind and heart, Jessica found herself at the bottom of an abyss. Each moment took her farther from Caladan, Duke Leto, and Paul. After receiving the Bene Gesserit ultimatum and the threat against her family, Jessica had crossed star systems in a Space and Guild Highliner, ordered back to Wallach 9 like a recalcitrant child. She felt no warm homecoming as she rode a shuttle down from the huge orbiting ship to the Sisterhood's dreary, cold homeworld. Would she ever see Caladan again? Or Leto? Or Paul? She shifted her position on the hard seat of the shuttle. Maybe the answer to that question depended on what Mother Superior Harishka wanted from her. Exceptionally strong side winds buffeted the vessel, which made the pilot change his descent and swoop around, rising higher until the turbulence abated. Other passengers muttered a drone of unease, but Jessica remained silent. She had her own turbulence to deal with. As she looked out the diamond-shaped window port, the roiling clouds mirrored her troubled mind. She resented the iron control that the sisterhood exerted over her. She had been separate from them many years, imagining herself independent on Caladan. But they had cracked the whip. The Bene Gesserit summons had left no room for discussion. Reverend Mother Mohaim had threatened to destroy the Duke and the future of House Atreides if she didn't obey, and the sisterhood certainly had the means to do so.
You know, it's really been such a pleasure to always talk to you guys and to see where, you know, things are, and I always got a kick out of hearing about what the next Dune book was going to be, in addition to talking about the one that we have, and it sounds like there's some other cool things coming up. Yeah, it's about time the Mentats got their own, too. I think that's awesome, not to mention the Navigators. That's going to be awesome to hear more about them and to find out what Frank thought of them, too, a little bit, and through you guys bringing that to life in the way you do so well. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
We appreciate that you actually read the books. Now, we do get interviewed a lot by people that don't read the books, and that's okay because we're broadening the audience. But the fact that you actually know details is really impressive, and we appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Kevin, last I heard, you know, anything happening with Captain Nemo? I know that was, they actually have a Verne movie right now out in the theaters a little bit, although loosely based, but anything happening with Captain?
Well, it has just been republished by a new publisher with
yeah.
an absolutely gorgeous steampunk cover on it, and
yeah.
it seems to be doing really well. I've gotten more reviews on this reprint than I got the first time around, and I'm seeing more copies around. Of course, now, because steampunk is so popular, it's got a whole new audience behind it, and the readers are loving it. As far as movie interest, we don't have any in it right now because Jules Verne's own works are out of copyright, so filmmakers could just take those without paying
anything. Yeah.
But the interest that other movies are generating helps people go and pick up my book and read it. So
mm-hmm.
I'm getting a nice audience on it. I'm thrilled that it was re-released by Titan Books, that they've done a very good job with it. And again, we've got so many irons in the fire that you and I could talk, and Brian here too, we could talk about our various books for probably 7 hours.
Oh, easily.
Well, I could kick off on the steampunk because I have a steampunk short story with Bruce Taylor in an anthology. It's The Great Steam Time Machine.
Oh, cool.
What if we had a steam-powered time machine?
That'd be awesome. I'd love to see that.
Those are fun. I mean, yeah. steampunk is just a really... I grew up with the stuff. Of course, they didn't call it steampunk, but mm-hmm. when I was watching the Rod Taylor movie of the time machine,
yep.
H.G. Wells, and the...
Yep.
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and,
mm-hmm.
and Vincent Price and Master of the World, and all these things were just wonderful as part of our childhood growing up to see the. To me, that's the way it should be done. I wish somebody would make a version of War of the Worlds that really did take place in the 1890s with
yeah.
horse-drawn cannons and clanking tripods going around and steam warships. And, I mean, rather than the Tom Cruise version or the and I absolutely love the George Pal G.
Oh, yeah.
Very version in the 50s, but they did modernize it so it took place in the 1950s instead
mm-hmm.
of. Steampunk is, I guess steampunk, you call it, that's what happens when goths discover brown.
Mm-hmm, yes.
It's cute.
I would even say, without even knowing it, that Jules Verne is probably the father of steampunk, and he certainly didn't realize he was inventing it when he wrote those books, but a lot of it, I think, has stemmed from his and Wells's work, too. So I think they're kind of like uh-huh. fathers.
Well, my editors have said about the Little Green Book that there's Jules Verne and H.G. Wells in there. So
oh, there you go.
I don't want to do a spoiler yet, but there's a lot of inventiveness in there.
Oh, that's cool. You know, one thing that occurred to me hearing you talk about the Native Americans, I always, you know, listening to that, it kind of, I look at the Fremen, and I think, you know, maybe Frank actually based a little bit about them you know, using the Native Americans in this country as kind of a basis for the Fremen, and what you, gentlemen, think of that?
Yeah, I go into that in some detail in Dreamer of Dune, the biography,
okay.
but one time I assumed that my father most modeled, would most consider himself, I guess, closest to Duke Leto, and because I know he modeled Lady Jessica after my mother, so I was assuming that when I asked a certain question of him, he would answer Duke Leto, so I asked him, you know, which character do you most identify with, Dad? And he said Stilgar. the leader of the Fremen. And really it is because Dad grew up with Native Americans in the Northwest and his best friend was a Native American. Dad saw that worldview. That was the filter through which he saw the not only this planet, but the universe.
Get Sisterhood of Dune wherever you get your books. And Sci-Fi Talk Plus continues its special offer for you, but also your friends and your family. Now approaching almost 1,000 episodes, commercial-free, uncut, and even special programs. Best part, it's free. Click on the link for show notes for free lifetime access. But this special offer will expire, so take advantage of it. This is Tony Tolotto.